Welcome to the podcast. My name's Tony Sanders, and this is the From the Ashes podcast. And today, we're going to travel back in time to 1996. You know, there was a guy that wrote a book one time. It was called Secrets of a Small Town. I read this book many, many, many years ago. And I cannot tell you exactly everything that was in the book because it's been so long ago. But I did find it interesting. I'm sure you could get it if you wanted it and you could read it yourself. It's not a very long book, but it was interesting. It's about a guy that went into a town and he had like a, if I remember correctly, a drop box of some sort where people could put secrets in, and he put them in his book. The things you might not realize, things that people keep in their closets, secrets that they don't share with anybody. Everybody has secrets. Everybody has secrets. We don't all share everything we know with everybody. We just don't. It's not something that we do. As a matter of fact, you know, I was reading something one time that said that, and when you talk about how much people lie, when they first meet somebody, they lie. I forget what it was. I want to say it was like three times in the first 10 minutes when you first meet somebody. And when you go on a first date, believe it or not, but typically they say that a person lies 50% of everything they say on a first date. Now, I'm sure not everybody's like that, but in general, that's a pretty high number. It shows how secretive people are and how important it is for them to put their best foot forward. They don't want people to see their vulnerabilities and the things that they kind of keep hidden from most people. You know, there's always one or two that kind of know your darkest secret. Well, it may be in some cases anyway. That doesn't mean you want to share it with everybody. And in 1996, there was a skeleton that I kept hidden in my closet that I don't talk about much. And I don't not talk about it because it was embarrassing. No, I wasn't embarrassed by it, and I wasn't afraid of it. I wasn't happy at the time, but I just don't talk about it. I haven't talked about it with my wife except briefly and one of my sons briefly. I don't say much about this. So if you're a friend or family member or somebody I knew in the past, y'all might find this interesting. You might find it interesting. Now, one or two people are aware kind of what happened, but they don't know the details. They don't know how I got there, how I got out of it, what was happening in the middle. So this is going to be new for a lot of people. Okay. But back in 1996, if I've got the date right, I think it's right, if I remember correctly, to set the stage for you, I was not talking to either one of my exes at the time. I had two daughters I didn't get to see, and I was very upset about that. My life had spiraled a little. And at one point, I ended up homeless for 2.5 weeks. And that may surprise some people. So we're going to talk about how I got there. All right, so back in 1996, like I said, the date, I think that's right, but I'd have to really sit down and think about it to make sure. It's been 28 years ago, roughly, at the time of this podcast, so I'm ballparking the dates, okay? Well, I was living with one of my grandparents, and only for a short time, and things weren't going well for me. Didn't really have a car at the time, didn't have a lot of money at the time, and I had gotten a job in Gaffney, South Carolina, at a plant that was there at the time called Cherokee Finishing. Cherokee Finishing. And it was like a dyeing and finishing type plant, you know, like with cloth and that kind. They did a lot of printing. And I worked there, I don't know how long exactly, but it was several months. It was several months. And because I was staying with somebody, you know, and I really wasn't in a relationship at the time when I started there, you know, I wanted something to occupy my time. I wanted to just stay gone and work. I mean, what else did I have to do, right? So I worked literally, you know, they ran 7 days a week most weeks, and I literally worked 16-hour days, two shifts, first and second, pretty much all week long. And my checks were pretty decent because, I mean, I had a lot of overtime, a lot of overtime. And my job there, to kind of fill you in, was to supply color to the lines and that kind of thing. And I drove a forklift. I did a couple other side jobs there. So I was fairly versatile, and I was young. I was in good shape, so I could work all day, and it was all right. It was all right. Well, while I was working there, I met a young lady. Well, I say young. She was older than I was by about, I'm just ballparking, 20 years. And her name was Glenda. And Glenda, I just found out a few months ago, had passed away a number of years ago. And bless her heart, she was a wonderful person. She really was. She was a wonderful person. And I'm certainly, you're going to find out a little bit about her in this podcast that's going to probably grab your heart a little bit. She really was a very sweet lady. And when I found out that she had passed, you know, I hated to hear that. I hated to hear it because, you know, when I met her there at the plant, she worked in the shading room or whatever you call it, but where they, match color and stuff. And she was always very friendly to me, and she had long red hair, a pretty sweet lady, very nice. I liked her a lot, and we ended up dating for a while. And, you know, it was funny because after we dated for a little while and I was living with a grandparent, it really sucked because, you know, it was hard to find time to do things because she lived kind of a ways off and I was living there. So we ended up at one point moving in together. Now, I don't know if we ever saw that going long term, but we moved in together for a while. It just seemed like it made sense at the time. You know, it enabled me to get out of my grandparents' hair without bothering them. And you know, it gave her some company and it just made sense. I had been through a lot to that point in my life and didn't know what the future held at that time, but it, like I said, it seemed like a good idea. Okay. So I was working there, but, I decided to leave Cherokee Finishing at some point, and I went and got a job, and this is the part I can't remember. I got a job making lawnmowers. I don't even remember where the heck that was. But it was somewhere on the other side of Rock Hill somewhere. I don't even know where it was exactly. And that's South Carolina, but I can't even remember. But there was a company or a plant or something that made lawnmowers. It's so long ago that I can't remember. And everything seemed to be going okay. You know, I was working at this lawnmower plant during the day. And then I was coming back to where we were staying. And she lived kind of over in that Rock Hill direction. She did. She lived over in that direction. Super, like I said, everything seemed to be going okay. Well, one day, let's back up and say this before we begin. As sweet as Glenda was, and she was a super nice lady. And like I said, I don't ever want to say anything negative about her because she's such a great lady. But she did have one flaw, if you want to call it a flaw. I don't really know what you call it, to be honest with you, but I always noticed that she had something in her past that bothered her. She didn't talk about it. She wouldn't tell me what it was. I had asked a couple of times briefly, but I didn't pry, or she didn't want to tell me. But I got the feeling that something had happened in the past and in some relationship or something. And she was, I don't know. She had this thing that would bother her. And when she would get upset about something, whether it was at me or something, whatever, she would sometimes disappear for 12, 13, 14 hours, sometimes a day. And then she would just show back up. And I don't know, like I said, she would just say she had to go clear her head, and I don't know. I didn't pry. It just seemed strange to me. And I should have saw this coming, the problems that were coming, because what happened one time is, and this is really weird. This was really weird. We went out one time and she says to me, she was concerned about something because I had dated one of her family members. And honestly, I had no idea what she was talking about. And I didn't think nothing of it. I thought, well, she must have me confused because I don't know who, I don't know what she's talking about. She told me a name and I was like, I don't remember that name. That doesn't ring a bell. And then she mentioned it again later. And I thought, well, that's odd. I don't know who she's talking about. And then she mentioned it again. And it, when I say later, I mean like days or weeks later. And then she mentioned it again. And at this point, I was thinking, man, this must be really bugging her. So I pried a little bit there and I asked her, I said, look, you're going to have to be more specific because when you say I dated somebody in your family, I was thinking it's somebody I forgot about and maybe we only went out once and she didn't like me and maybe she's, you know what I mean? You don't know what the heck she's talking about. So I pry a little bit and then I realize who she's talking about. And I had no idea they were even related. But the weird part about it is this girl and I, we never went out. I didn't know who the heck, I didn't, that's why it was so puzzling. We never went out. But when I realized who she was, the only reason I ever met this person is because her husband invited me over one day with his wife and a couple other people to play Monopoly. That's the only time I ever met her. We never dated. We never went out. I don't even know where that came from. It was very puzzling to me. I was like, where in the world did that come from? So I explained this to her. I said, look, somebody's got this all wrong. I said, I know it didn't come from the lady herself because we never went out. I don't even know what you're talking about. But that was, I didn't realize it at the time, but that was a key piece of information. It really revealed something that was going on in her mind that something was, she was worried about something. And that was important for the story. So anyway, back to the lawnmower plant that I was working at. So I come home one day. When I say home, I mean to her place. Okay. And she lived in a mobile home. It was a very nice, clean place. And like I said, I came home one day and she lived at the end of this, like a cul-de-sac and kind of by herself a little bit. And I can't remember how I got home. I don't remember. I think somebody dropped me off, somebody I worked with, or I cannot remember that part. But I remember she was sitting in her car with another family member. I'm not going to say who that is. But, I'll explain why in a minute, but she was sitting in her car and she said, hey, come here. And they were sitting in the front seat. So I sit in the back seat. And when I get in the back seat, I look over to my right and my duffel bag is sitting there. And my duffel bag has all of my clothes and whatever in it. I didn't have a whole bunch of stuff, but my duffel bag had my clothes and the things that were important to me in that bag, which I thought was odd. And then she looks at me and she goes, I want you to leave. And I said, really? And it's weird because, you know, I had just gotten paid the other day and I had helped the bills and stuff and I didn't have any extra money. I think I only had like $7 to my name. And she goes, yeah, I want you to leave. Now, at this point in the story, something else happened. Not going to say what it was, but it wasn't good. And it was something that really kind of took me back. I was very surprised by this. So we're going to leave that there. We're not going to get into all that. I've got my reasons, but it was very strange to me. And I asked her, I said, well, why are you telling me I have to leave? Can you tell me what's going on? And she says to me, she goes, I believe you're cheating on me, which was a real shocker because I had no idea what she was talking about. And I said, cheating on you? I said, what are you talking about? And she goes, well, I believe you're cheating on me. And I said, well, that can't be. And I had already been through a lot in my life. And really, I didn't have any interest in anything else. I just wanted some peace and quiet in my life. I didn't need any more drama. I hadn't been through so much. That's the last thing I would have been doing. And I looked at her and I said, well, who's, do you think I'm cheating on you with? What do you think's happened? And she looks at me and she goes, well, you're younger than me by a good bit, so you have to be cheating. And that was her reasoning. Again, another clue to what the previous conversations had led me to. It was very revealing as to what might be going on in her mind and maybe what she had dealt with in the past. And I said, fine, no problem. Because of what I'm not going to talk about happened, I was like, you know, no problem. So I get my duffel bag, I get out of the car, and I start walking. And I start walking towards Rock Hill, South Carolina. That was the closest place to me. And I'm thinking, oh boy, you know, I had, at the time, I didn't talk to my exes. I didn't even know where they were. I had no contact information. I really didn't have contact information for most people. Wasn't really getting along with some people in my family very well. Didn't have a lot of friends at the time. I was kind of to myself. I had been through a lot the last few years. So it was really not a good time to be walking down the road, if you understand what I'm saying. So I don't remember how long it took me, but I just kept walking until I got to Rock Hill. And it was getting dark at this point. And over near the overpass, and I forget the main road that goes through the middle of Rock Hill there, but there is an overpass, and there used to be, because there was no cell phones really back then. I'm sure maybe somebody had them, but I didn't have one, and I'm sure most people didn't. But there was a payphone near the overpass, over near the overpass, and I stopped by there, and I only had like $7. I didn't have hardly any money. So I got change, and I went by the phone there, and I made two calls. I called one family member, not going to say who, and they wouldn't come pick me up because, like I said, I was on the rocks with some people in the family. And that irritated me. That's fine. And then I called my best friend at the time. He worked at Cherokee Finish, and I had known him for years, long before I ever worked there. And I said, hey, man. And he lived in Blacksburg, which is, I want to say, 30 or 40-minute drive from Rock Hill. And I said, hey, I need you to come pick me up. I said, I'm stranded. I got nowhere else to go, and I need you to come. And I had never asked him for anything. And it surprised me what he said next. He says, well, I got to get up early in the morning, so I'm not going to come pick you up. He says, I'm kind of tired. I'm not going, you know, I don't want to have to worry with that tonight. And that really shocked me. It really shocked me. And so I just hung up the phone. And at that point, I decided I had already had two rejections, which really bothered me. And I was like, you know, I'm not calling anybody else. I said, I'll figure this out on my own. I don't know what I'm going to do, but I'm going to figure it out on my own. And it's getting late. I mean, it's dark and it's getting late. I mean, I don't know. I can't remember what time it was, but it was up in the evening. And I didn't have anywhere to sleep, and I didn't have enough money to get a place. So it was not good. It was not good. So what I did then, in the story, you'll see how things kind of unfold as we go, but there was a motel down in that area where I was at, in that strip area. And so I walked to this motel, and there was a guy that apparently he owned the place. I guess he was from India, maybe. I don't know, but so I asked him if he had a minute and to talk about, got a little bit of an issue. And so we went into this room that had it was like a conference table area. We sat down, I explained to him the situation, and I asked him, I said, hey, I'm going to have to figure out the money thing here. I'll have to go get a job somewhere around here locally. I said, I can pay you, but it'd be a couple of weeks. Would you mind letting me stay here for a while I figure all this out, and I'll pay you? I really thought he would say no. I really did. I thought he'd say no. And I would have understood that, but it was worth a shot. I mean, what did I have to lose, right? But he said he would. He said, I'll do that. No problem. And I thought, wow, that's nice. So he gave me a key to a room, and I went and went to the room and got a shower, and I went to sleep. And now the next morning, I walked down the street to a temp agency, and I told them my situation, and they sent me to a job not too far out of town, because I told them I didn't have a car and I had to walk there. And it was a glass company. It was a glass company. And I didn't know. It was a little bit of a walk. I'm not going to lie. It took me a while to get there. I don't know exactly how long it was, because it's been a while. But I want to say it was an hour, maybe. Maybe a little less, maybe a little more. But it was not short or quick. It took a little time to get there. So they sent me right over. I went over. I worked a shift there. And then I came back. I slept another night, and then I got up the next morning, and I forget what happened, but by the time I got out the door and I walked to the job site at the plant there, or the facility, whatever, I was about 20 minutes late. I underestimated the time because I hadn't been there long, and I kind of offshot it. And they were irritated right from the get-go, because they were like, well, you're not going to be reliable, And I think they saw me walking down the road, and that put them off too, you know. And so then I got turned away from that. And so I was right back where I started, having to find work again. And that really bugged me. It was quite a walk. So I wasn't like, you know, I kind of understood their position. I hated it. I wished I had left way early. I thought I had left in plenty of time, but I offshot it, you know. So I come back to this hotel, and I'm sitting out there. They got this pool area, and it was a crappy pool because the place was not the greatest place. It was one of those pools at some of these places that you see that needs a lot of work, and you wouldn't probably ever swim in it. You know what I mean? It's one of those. But there was no chairs anywhere, and I didn't want to just sit in a dark room, you know? So I thought, well, so I go over here and I sit by the pool, and there's a lady out there. Now, I don't know her, and I've never seen her before, and she was very upset. And I didn't bother her at first. I sat there for a while, and I just kind of was thinking about what the heck I was going to do and how I needed to approach this to get out of this mess. But she was upset for, gosh, I mean, it went on for 45 minutes or so, and she was just bawling. So I figure, okay, I'm probably going to regret this. So I walk over there and I ask her if she's okay. You know, the compassionate side of me got the better of me. And I went over and asked her if she was okay. Now, she didn't strike me as a homeless individual. She didn't strike me as that. But she also didn't strike me as anybody that had anywhere to go. The way she talked to me was she was in a bad relationship. Things didn't go well. She was very upset about it. She didn't get into any real details. She didn't want to say much about it other than it went wrong. And I didn't pry. I mean, it wasn't any of my business really. And I asked her, I said, I guess you're staying in the hotel. She said, no. I said, well, do you have a place to stay? She goes, no, not really. And I said, well, that's not good. And me being in the position that I was in, I felt kind of bad for her, really. And I was like, good Lord. So I explained kind of what I was going through a little bit. And I told her, I said, I'm in room so-and-so. I said, look, if you just need a place to take a shower and take a nap, I said, I might be here for a few days. I might not. I said, but you can come and sleep there at night if that's what you need. There was two beds in there. And I said, I'm not going to bother you. I didn't even, at this point in time, I felt bad for her. I didn't even know her name at this point in time. And I really didn't think she would even take me up on it. So, and I told her, I hope things get better, and I leave. And I go to my room, and I'm thinking about how I'm going to tackle everything. And later at night, I don't know, it was dark, but she shows up. She shows up, and she says, would you mind if I at least get some sleep and stuff? And I said, sure, come on in and get some sleep and take your shower if you need to. I said, I'm not going to bother you. And she did. She took a shower and she went to bed. And she didn't say much. She was very quiet, and I didn't bother her. You know, I figured she wanted to talk, she'd let me know. And in the middle of the night, she woke up crying again. And I didn't say much right at first. I thought, man, she must be going through some hard times right now. You know, and she was crying again, and she cried for a while. And I finally sat up on the edge of the bed because I couldn't get any sleep. She was in this room, and it was not, you know what I mean? It's kind of quiet. And I said, hey, you want to talk a little bit, and maybe I can cheer you up? And she was very standoffish. Yeah, you could almost tell she didn't trust guys very much. Something had happened to her. I don't know what it was, but it wasn't good. It wasn't, you could tell it wasn't good, you know. So we talk a little while, not about her problems, just stuff in general, just trying to cheer, get her mind off of it a little bit. And she kind of stopped crying a little, and then she went back to sleep. And I woke up the next morning, I heard the door shut, and she was gone. And I don't know where she went. Don't know what happened to her. I don't even remember her name, but I think she appreciated she must have come to some conclusion about what she wanted to do. She must have come up with an idea, but she was very nice and she just left. Well, the next day, and I had been thinking about how to approach this mess I was in even further. And this was like the third day coming up. And this is when things get really bad. I get a call from the owner of the hotel in my room at some point. I think he waited till I came back. I had been walking down to the, talking to a couple places about maybe working or something. And he calls me and I go into this office area, and it's a good thing I took my wallet. Because when I get there, he goes, you know, I've changed my mind. He goes, I want you to leave. And I said, okay. I said, can you tell me why? And he says, no, I just want you to leave. I said, well, I can't pay the bill yet, so I'm not worried about it. He said, I just want you to leave. And I thought, well, this is great. Okay, so he changes his mind. And the problem is my bag was still in that room. And I've got my wallet, luckily. My bag is still in that room. And that had my clothes, my change of clothes, all my, you know, necessities. And it had my picture, the only picture of either one of my girls I ever had. It was a picture of her when she was a baby, Crystal. And I couldn't get that picture. So I go back to the office and I tell this guy, hey, I need to get my stuff out of the room. He says, I can't help you. Now, at this point, it put me in a bad spot because I thought about calling the police and having them sort it out. But then I changed my mind on that because of what I had went through in Iowa. I had a little thing in Iowa I had to deal with. Nothing bad, but it bothered me. I didn't know if I wanted to go that route. Because if it did come up and he started to press the issue about the money of staying 2 or 3 days, I didn't have it to pay. And I thought, well, I guess I'm just out of bag and I'm never going to have my picture again and my clothes. And that was it. And now I'm down to the few dollars I got left. I probably got $4 or $5 left. I've got no clothes, no bag, no photo of my little girl, no nothing. And that's why all of these years I wanted another picture of my daughters as they grew up. I never got one. I've seen a picture kind of them on the internet and all lately, but that's not the same as getting an actual photograph from your little girl or, you know, people, a real photograph. It bothered me. But that was the only one I ever had. It really upset me. That upset me more than the clothes. None of that really, because that stuff, you know, you can replace that, but I can't replace that photograph. So anyway, now I'm in a really bad spot. I got no place to stay. And I didn't want to go and talk to anybody else about it. I knew I was going to have to do something entirely different. Entirely different. So I go sit down on this little bench down the road, and I'm just sitting there. And I'm thinking, and I'm like, this ain't good. This is not good. So this starts the beginning of what ends up being 2.5 weeks on the street, pretty much. Okay, because I didn't count the time I was in the hotel because I had to place a roof over my head, but this was different. I didn't know how long I was going to be out there. Okay. So the first thing I do is I get a hold of, I ask somebody, a store or something, if they had some extra stationery and a pencil that they could give me. And I got a pencil and some stationery, and I went to the post office and I had mailed a letter. Now, this is going to sound strange, but during all this time, you know, I'm having to pay child support, you know, to my first wife. And I'm on the street now. I'm thinking, how in the heck am I going to pay child support out here? So that concerned me. I was like, this ain't good. So I actually, now this is going to sound strange, but this is what I did. I sat there and I wrote a letter. I had a piece of paper I just happened to have in my wallet that had the name of the judge that oversaw my case or something. I don't know. I don't even know if he has anything to do with it anymore at the time. I don't know anything about that. And I didn't know what else to do. So I sit down and I write a letter to this judge explaining to him what happened. Now, to this day, I have no idea if he ever got the letter. I don't know, but I mailed him a letter and told him that I would catch it up, but it was going to be tough for me for a little while. And I just let him know up front it was going to be hard, that I didn't even have a place to stay right now. I figured that was better than nothing, because that's where I was. I was in a very bad spot. Now, this is important because, you know, a lot of people, when they run into difficulty in their lives, people respond in different ways. You know, I've talked to my boys about this because I've had such a unique perspective on this. You know, sometimes when you watch that survival shows on TV or online or whatever, and some people, they go out there and they go, hey, I'm an expert in survival, and they go out there and they suck. They don't know anything about what they're doing. And people are like that. When they are really put in a tough position, some people fold and some flourish. And in my lifetime, I have found that in some areas of my life, I don't do very well. And in some areas, I tend to respond very well. It depends on what we're talking about. I think that's true for everybody. And I think most people are aware of their strengths and their weaknesses. They're aware of it. They understand. They know deep down what their strengths and weaknesses. Most people do. I think they do anyway. So I'm sitting out there, like I said, and I'm trying to figure out what I'm going to do. And I come up with an idea and I'm like, okay, I'm going to have to get tough. The one thing that bothered me is I had a lot of stuff bother me, but the one thing that really bothered me about being outside like that is I didn't want to sleep on a bench or on the ground. I, you know, it's weird. When I was in the Army, when we'd go out and camp or something for a couple, I didn't care about getting in the mud and dirty and sleeping in a hole, whatever. That didn't bother me. But because it was a different situation. Duty's one thing. Just sleeping outside as a homeless person, that, to me, that's a hard thing to do, because when you do that, it's almost like, not that there's anything wrong with that. Some people don't have a choice, but I think it's almost like you're conceding a little bit, you know, to your circumstances. And it's a difficult thing mentally to reconcile, you know, and I had a hard time with it. I was like, you know, I'm not sleeping out here. I didn't know what I was going to do, but I was not sleeping out here. And that was another problem, because I thought, where the heck am I going to sleep? And I wasn't going to go sleep in, you know, some squalor somewhere. I wasn't going to do that. So I was stuck. I was stuck. But anyway, I'm sitting out there looking and I'm thinking, what in the world am I going to do? So I, you know, and I think this is where a part of me really flourished. This is where the best part of me kind of kicked in. Your instincts kick in and you become whatever it is you got to be to survive. And I'm looking over here across the road, and there is a, now get this, a Bojangles and a Wendy's right beside each other. And I'm sitting there looking at them, And I'm watching these people go in and out of their store, and I'm thinking, you know, sometimes you just got to do what you got to do, you know. So I get up, and I march right over to Bojangles. And I've got clothes on. I'm clean. I mean, I hadn't been out there that long now, and, you know, and I've got my wallet and my identification stuff, luckily. And I go in there, and I talk to the manager, and they say, at first they go, well, I'm kind of busy right now. And I said, look, I know you're busy. I said, but this is an emergency. And I said, if you've got time to talk to me, I would be extremely grateful. And so they say, okay, give me a few minutes. And they come out there and talk to me, and I explain to them the overview of what I was dealing with. And the manager, to their credit, they said, okay. They said, I need a biscuit maker early in the morning. They said, would you like that job? And I said, earlier the better, because that means less time I got to sit out of here on the whatever. He said, well, you got to be here around 4 o'clock in the morning. He said, I can schedule you just about every morning at 4 o'clock. I said, fantastic. And he was going to work me as long as he could. Now, he couldn't work me every day, but he was going to work me as long as he could. That way I could not be outside. And as soon as I left talking to him, I marched right across the parking lot to Wendy's. And I march right into Wendy's. And this was, if you know anything about Wendy's, this was back in the day when they had this, what is it, like a Mexican bar? Y'all remember the Mexican bar back Wendy's used to have forever ago? Yes. So I go in there and I do the same thing. I tell the manager, hey, I really need to speak to you. If you have a minute, I would be very grateful. And to their credit, they sat down and they talked to me and I explained the same thing. And I told them I just went next door and got a job in the morning. If you could work me in the afternoon, I would be plumb tickled to death. And I said, I'll do a great job. And I need the money desperately. And they said, okay, we'll give you a job. And so I got a job at Wendy's in the evening. No kidding. So I was, you know, and even today, now customer service kind of sucks nowadays in most places around where I live. I don't know about the whole country. But I have a soft spot in my heart for Bojangles and Wendy's because from back then, they really saved my butt. They really did. I'm not going to lie. And I will forever be grateful for them for that. That's why no matter how bad customer service gets, I still have a soft spot for those places. And so what I started doing was working all morning long, and then I was working all evening long at Bojangles just about every day that I could, pretty much. Not every single day, but whatever they could possibly give me. They knew the spot that I was in, and I didn't even have enough money to buy meals, but I will say this, that Wendy's, well, back then they let me eat a little bit off the bar, and they gave me a little, you know, a little food here, there, which was nice. I thought they were really, that was really a generous thing for them to do. Very nice. I'm very grateful to them for that. But because I was hungry. Oh, man, I was getting hungry. But now we're left with the problem, me not wanting to sleep outside. And when I got off at night, it was around midnight or a little after. And then I had to be back at work most mornings at 4. So I had about 4 hours to kill, and I was determined that I was not going to sleep on the pavement. And I didn't have anywhere to go. So what I would do when I got off of at Wendy's, I would walk down the road to this gas station thing. It was a truck stop that had showers. And I would go in there and take a shower. And then I would come back and sit outside of Bojangles or Wendy's. There was a newspaper dispenser out there. And I would get a newspaper and just sit out there and read the newspaper. Now, the first night or two, that was no problem. I was starting to get very tired. And occasionally I would doze a little, but I would catch myself. I was determined I was not sleeping out there. I was getting exhausted. But anyway, the second or third night of this, a police officer pulls up. Now, I want to tell you, and before I finish, you know, get into all the rest of this, police officers get a bad rap lately in the press from some of these people. I don't know. I mean, there's a lot of fine police officers out there. I think it's kind of ridiculous, to be honest, that they get a bad rap sometimes because most 99.9% of all the police officers are very fine people. And back in 1996 in Rock Hill, South Carolina, these police officers were fantastic. Amazing people. They did their job about as well as you could. I mean, they really did. They, when they pulled up, they asked me what I was doing. And I said, well, I work here. That's the first thing I said. And that made a difference, of course. And I told them I was waiting for my shift. And they were like, well, you're out here awfully early at night. And all. And I explained to them my whole situation. And they were very understanding. And they, you could see that they admired the fact that I was trying to deal with this the best I could. They understood it, and they did not bother me. As a matter of fact, and this is the interesting part, they would actually come around at night, just about every night, and stop by and check on me and ask me how I was doing, which was extraordinary. Not many people would do that. And they didn't just check on me. They would sit sometimes for an hour and a half, unless something was happening, because it was in the middle of the night. Not a lot going on sometimes, but they, if they could, they would sit there as time permitted, and they would hang out and chat with me. And they were very, very nice people. I got the impression that they were pulling for me. I really did. I got the impression that they wanted to see me get through this. And when I did have a shift off here or there, I'd get a little shift off from one of the little restaurants there, and I was really tired. Now, you're going to find this very interesting. There was a movie theater back then. I don't know if it's still there, but it was right across the street kind of from this area. Maybe not exactly, but you get the idea. And what I was doing was, when I was working in those restaurants, I was doing all I could for the customers. I was working on the register, cleaning tables, talking to people, bringing them extra stuff. I was doing everything I could to make sure they were happy, make sure they had, you know, refills on their drinks. I was doing everything I could. And I actually got a few people I started to realize would leave me a few tips because I was doing it overkill. I was working really hard because I didn't have anything. And, so it was nice that I'd get a little bit. They didn't know my circumstance, but they thought the service was overkill, and I actually got a couple of tips. It wasn't much. It wasn't much. But it was enough that on a couple of occasions, I could go over here to the movie theater on my shifts off, and I would buy a matinee ticket. And I would go into the movie theater, watch a movie, you know, whatever. And I always sat in the same seat. Four rows back, center aisle on the right, on the end, aisle seat. And I felt comfortable in that spot. You could get a good view of the theater's, you know, screen. And I know this sounds weird, but even today when I go to the movies, I try to sit in the same spot because that gave me an opportunity to kind of just fade out for a while and pretend that I wasn't stranded on the street somewhere. It gave me a chance to kind of relax for a minute. And I did doze off in the movie theater. I was so tired, man. Oh my gosh, I was so tired. And I did doze off. And I would do that a couple of times when I had a little extra money, I'd go and do that. And I was drinking, you know, drinks at work. And so I was hydrated and I was managing. I was just waiting to get paid. And eventually, after doing this for a couple of weeks, like I said, I eventually did get paid. And the first thing I did was I went to a local hotel there and I rented a room with some of my pay. I cashed it and then I went there. And I told the managers at the restaurant I needed a day off to recover. And they understood. They didn't bother me. They were like, hey, I get it, man. And I slept all day. And I took about 5 showers. Oh my gosh. And I slept all day, baby. Oh man. I was exhausted. Exhausted because I had been trying to force myself to stay awake except for dozing off or sleeping in the movie theater. And when I was watching a movie, I would doze off sitting straight up. And I did that for over 2 weeks. And once I had a little bit of money in my pocket, it wasn't a ton, but it was some, I decided to call Glenda. And so I go to a payphone because I still didn't have enough money right now to get a place. I didn't have enough money. I had enough, but I didn't have that much. You know what I mean? I had enough to eat on now, but I was still going to be out there a little while until I got a piece. It was going to be a long road. But I decided to call Glenda, and I called her at work, and she answered the phone, and I said, "It's me." And I said, "Look, I want you to tell me why you did it." And she says to me, "Are you still out there?" And I said, "Yeah, I'm still out here. Where'd you think I was going to go?" She said, "Where are you staying?" I said, "I don't have a home. I'm living on the street." And she starts to cry. She says, "Tell me where you are, and I'll be right there." And she left work, and she drove straight to pick me up. And then she cried and gave me a hug. And, you know, we hugged each other for probably an hour. And, of course, I quit my jobs and left. I was ready to get the heck out of Rock Hill. Nothing against Rock Hill. I love the people there, especially those fine police officers. But I was ready to go. You can imagine I was ready to go. And I'm always going to be grateful to Bojangles and Wendy's for doing that for me. But she brought me back to Blacksburg, South Carolina, which was not too far from Rock Hill. And there was a mobile home there that had a rent sign. It was a bi-weekly maybe. I can't remember, but I had enough money for that. I went and spoke to the owner, and they didn't live too far from there, and I convinced this older lady to let me stay there. I didn't have any furniture. And I think somebody either gave me a television. It was an old television, or I went and got one. I can't remember, but I got a really cheap, crappy TV. And my only chair was a milk carton. So I wasn't out of the woods yet. I was still struggling. But hey, I had a roof over my head at this point. And you could tell that it bothered Glenda for all of this. She apologized like 50 times. And it's weird. I could see she was genuinely sad about it. And I think it bothered her really bad. And I wasn't mad at her. I mean, I wasn't happy about the situation, but I wasn't mad at her. I thought a lot of her. I thought she was a really good person. I think she just made a mistake. And unfortunately, sometimes when things like that happen, if you don't have a backup plan, it can put you in a tough spot. I mean, it really can. But anyway, I kept in touch with Glenda for a while, up until I got married to my current wife. And, you know, I would talk to her on and off. You know, we would get together a couple of times here or there and go get something to eat or whatever. And I just always thought the world of her. Really did. She was a special lady. She really was. And that's why when I saw that she had passed away, it bothered me. Because even though I went through all that, I didn't blame her. I weathered the storm. It was not easy. But I knew I didn't deserve to be there. But, I mean, I'd made mistakes in my life too. So I didn't blame her. I didn't. I was glad to heck be out of there. But when I got married to my current wife, and she'll remember this better than I do. I had mentioned this to her the other day if she remembered. But when we got married, I didn't tell her about this whole thing about me living on the street for 2.5 weeks. That's not something you tell a wife that when you first get married or you're about to get married. You don't bring it up. So naturally, right? Okay, so. But Glenda had wanted to see me, and I had just gotten married. And Holly and I told her, I said, "Look," and it was this weird thing. I said, "Look, she knew a little bit about Glenda, but she didn't know much. I didn't talk about Glenda too much. I kept it to myself. It was just not something I felt comfortable with talking at the time. I mean, I eventually told her, obviously, but I told her, I said, look, I know this sounds weird, but do you mind hanging out here? And I forget where I dropped her off. She still gives me a hard time about it. But I said, I need to go sit down and have a conversation with her and I'll be right back. And I did. It was really strange. And she kind of gives me a hard time about it. I mean, I probably handled that wrong, but she understood. Luckily, I had a very understanding wife and she didn't hold it against me. But I went and I talked to Glenda. And you could tell it still bothered her. She was very sweet. And she gave me a card. It was a really nice card. And it said she had hand wrote a letter on it. It was a lot of nice things she said. It was almost poem-like. She had a really good way about writing. She was, she did a good job. She really did. And you could tell that she wished things had gone a little differently because I think she genuinely cared about me. And I appreciated it. I cared about her too. I didn't want to see her. I wanted her to have a happy life. I did, but I couldn't see us ever getting back together after all that. But I cared about her a lot. I really did. She was a fantastic person. Really fantastic. And, but she gave me this little card with this handwritten note and I still have it today. I've kept it for what, 25, 26, you know, wait a minute, more than that, 20, 27, 20, I don't know. It's been 26, 27 years I've kept that card. And I just kind of reread it again the other day. It's something I'll always keep. She's not here anymore, but I'll always keep. That means a lot to me. I'll never get rid of it. It reminds me of a time when things got out of hand and I ended up out there on the street somewhere. I don't know whether that experience made me better, worse, stronger, but I'm going to tell you something that I said to her. You got to understand, looking back on it now, I'm in a better state of mind, but back then I had been through a lot, man. I had the whole army thing and then I had the whole going to the Bahamas and problems with that. I'll get to that later. And then I had living on the street for 2.5 weeks. I was out there really a little more than that, but you get the idea. And there's one thing that kind of shows you the kind of the state of mind I was in back then, how much you could tell emotionally exhausted of what all I had been through. So I'm going to tell you this. You're going to find this really strange. I found it. I still think it's strange, but I remember like it was yesterday. So when Glenda and I were having that last conversation, last time I ever saw her, I looked at her and when we first sat down and I was dead serious and I looked at her and I was a little bit, I looked at her and said, you're not going to hurt me again, are you? And she was surprised and she goes, of course not. And it was very telling that I had, my mind and my emotions were exhausted. I was very tired of just too much of everything, really. And you could tell it bothered her, but I don't even know why I said it really, but I was just tired. I didn't mean it as a shot. I was very serious. But anyway, you know, it just kind of goes to show you how we all handle. I don't know how other people would have handled that scenario. I don't know. I don't know what they would have done in that scenario. But that's what I did. And even today, even in my marriage, this marriage, I've been married, luckily, to two fantastic people. And in this marriage, even when I get stressed out, in the past when I'd have a really bad time and I need to kind of recover emotionally, you know, Glenda would go take a break or whatever she needed to do. I guess people have different things they do to relax or kind of unwind or whatever it is they do. But I still sometimes go to the movie theater and I'll sit in the same place and I'll watch a movie and it helps me forget for a little while. And something about going back in time and sitting in the same spot in the same theater. And even then when we go to the theater together, me and Holly, she knows exactly where I'm going to sit. If I go online now that they have the assigned seats and I can't sit in that general area, if it's not close to there, sometimes I don't even bother going. I have to sit in that same spot. It just gives me peace. That's where I need to be. And it's a funny thing. It's a funny, funny thing. I never will forget it. It's just, it's interesting how things affect you. They really do. Well, guys, thank you for listening to the podcast. I hope you have a great holiday season. Christmas just a few days away. You take care of yourself, and we'll spoke at you again soon.